Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Wars bring death, and with it, apocalyptic thought. In our next conversation with Dr. Christopher Blythe, we're going to learn more about how world wars affected LDS apocalyptic thinking. We'll also talk about a famous prophecy in which people thought that Jesus would return in 1890. Check out our conversation.
Well, one of the interesting things that really kind of struck me in your book was this idea that around 1890, there was the prophecy that Joseph Smith would see God when he was
85
years old, which would have been about 1890. Mm-hmm. And so there was this kind of resurgence of apocalyptic thought. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think leading up into the 1880s, there's several moments. You know, in 1880, Wilford Woodruff himself is going to say 1890, there'll be no more United States. People are really moving, but as they get closer to that date, people begin to become less certain. Mm-hmm. And so some scholars have pointed to the conference of October 1890 as the spot where leaders seem to be like on either side of the issue. I don't think that's actually the case. I think when you get to that conference, really, the majority of leaders are just completely sold. They think 1890, you know, the one sort of pro-1890 comments are more to say, I think 1890 could be an important year, but we likely won't even understand the events that happened in 1890 till way after. Like, something might happen this year, but we won't recognize it. Or something, 1890 is important, but really, every year is important until we get to the second coming. So don't just focus on this one. Wilford Woodruff comes with his revelation. He's seen Joseph Smith, and he's asked him, when's the second coming? And Joseph Smith tells Wilford Woodruff, I don't know. No man knows the day or the hour. And so you get this sort of shift. But after 1890, I think people become sort of... There's still some people that want to say, what happened there? The church doesn't want to come out and say this, but so we get a lot of speculation. What did happen in 1890? Some people want to turn towards the ghost dance, which I think is fascinating.
We have the manifesto in 1890, which is kind of a strange twist to this whole thing.
Isn't that interesting? So that's the question. Is the issuing of the manifesto, 2 months before Joseph's 85th birthday, is that maybe 3 months, is that tied into our expectations of what's going on there? I don't know that it's tied to Wilford Woodruff, who thinks, you know, we don't know the moment, but yeah, sure, it's coming really quick. But it might be certainly tied to the reception of the manifesto. You know, did regular Latter-day Saints who had made plural marriage an essential part of their religion for the past 40 years, did they think, oh, this isn't that big a deal, this is just government smokescreen, because we're right there, the Savior's going to come really quickly? Yeah. So I think it's very possible.
Yeah. Well, and of course, anytime we get into wars, you kind of mentioned World War I and World War II, mm-hmm. those are some great times for apocalyptic thought. Can you talk about those time periods?
Sure. World War I was... very important moment of Latter-day Saint apocalyptic and us rethinking how we fit into this story. Ultimately, we were pacifists. The idea of Utah, a great verse, I'm not going to remember where it is, says if you don't want to take up a sword in the last days, flee to Zion, right? Zion is the place where there won't be war. Latter-day Saints don't fight wars. God defends their battles, and maybe they have to protect themselves defensively, but they're not going out to wage war. They are the place where people can be protected. And so now, and it started with the Spanish-American War, church leaders are saying, hey, you have your duty to fight for the nation, just like you had a duty to fight when soldiers came to Utah in 1857 for your faith. You know, George Buchanan is taking that idea. In the Spanish-American War, we have Franklin Richards opposing that idea, saying, no, we are pacifists. Don't buy into that. But by the time we get to World War I, that's changed for the most part. And leaders are encouraging Latter-day Saints to participate as good Americans. Now, how does that make sense with prophecies about Zion, particularly if this is the last day's war? And so I think it's fascinating. James Talmadge and others begin to say, we used to talk about Zion about us, but really Zion's the United States. And this government's over the United States, and so there's Zion. And we can't be defeated because prophecies of Zion say it can't be defeated. So if the United States is Zion, therefore we're the winners here. Really interesting. Now prophecies occurring with us in place there. There is a great set of World War I prophecies from lay members of the church. Lorona Wilson is my favorite. I don't get to discuss her much in this book. I'm hoping I get to write a whole book on her. But she's a disabled prophetess who ran a dressmaking college in Cache Valley who begins to prophesy about World War I. And her prophecies are about how if the saints will immerse themselves and work for the dead, that they will be able to avoid actually having to go fight. And, you know, they'll be able to win easily and so on in Europe. And a whole slew. World War II is different. In some ways, I mean, I got a great letter from someone, a well-known reporter, but I won't say her name, sent me this great letter quoting her grandparents, who talked about how the prophet at the time was supposed to be the last prophet of the church, the prophet at World War II.
That would have been Heber J. Grant, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is the seventh prophet. And so some people were making a big deal about how he's the last here. And the letter says, you know, now that we've passed this time period, what are we going to say to all these people who expected, you know, the second coming during his reign? And that's related to World War II. I think World War II, of course, changes everything, though, for apocalypticism throughout America. Not only does it instigate the Cold War, but now we've seen the atomic bomb. And the atomic bomb, you know, you look at 19th century Latter-day Saint apocalypticism, and the emphasis is on disease. Certainly on fighting amongst, you know, skirmishes and war, on racial conflicts. And now 1945 shows up and all American apocalypse turns towards this idea of fire, right? Now we understand how, you know, the globe could be burned, and so the atomic bomb becomes a major emphasis, not only in evangelical prophecy literature, but in our own.
Yeah. Well, interesting.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Christopher Blythe. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about modern apocalypticists you probably have heard of.
So this community comes together, and from it, visionaries rise to the fore. And but they also, it's interesting, you'd have these visionaries like Julie Rowe or visionaries like Sarah Monet, eventually Chad Daybell, Spencer, who John Pontius writes his story. They all gain a lot of steam initially in these sorts of online communities.
Thanks for listening to Gospel Tangents. I really appreciate it. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and for just $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without interruptions. Also, we've also got transcripts available, like these here, that are available on Patreon as well as on our website. So to get those, just for $10 a month, you can subscribe and hit the yellow subscribe button. We've also got paperbacks like these. If you want to get those, you can get those at Amazon.com and just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can get the paperback versions. Or we've also got subscriptions on those as well. And if you subscribe on our website, I'll send those to you as soon as they're finished automatically. Don't forget to get our latest updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to tweet at us at gospeltangents. Of course, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts at a tiny URL facebook.com/gospeltangents. And please give us a 5-star rating for those of you who listen to audio only. And of course, you should show your support for Gospel Tangents with one of these cool t-shirts, like this green one, or light blue, sport gray, royal blue, purple, of course black, beautiful gold, and of course Utah red. I've probably left out some colors, but if you want to see more, go to gospeltangents.com/shop and you can get one of these. So by the way, if you get one of these by Christmas and show your support for Gospel Tangents, I'll even send you a copy of a PDF transcript of your choice, anyone. So just make your order hopefully by December 1st so you can get it in time for Christmas. And but I'll even keep it open till through the end of the year. So just sign up, get a t-shirt at gospeltangents.com/shop, any color that you like, and I will send you a free PDF if you do it before the end of the year. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.